Parenting's hard, you don't know what to do. You're blaming your kids, but it's probably you. You love your kids and that you can trust. Just remember your kids don't suck.
Welcome to Your Kids Don't Suck, cultivating closeness with your children through non-coercive conscious parenting. We're your hosts, Kara Tedstone and Rathia Lee. Let's dive in and grow together.
Welcome back to Your Kids Don't Suck, and we are so happy to be building a following. It's wonderful to grow a group of parents and people who are child advocates who really, really want to learn. So thank you for being here. And today we have a guest of someone that I really adore and really respect, whose name is Yolanda Williams. I thought I would read Yolanda's bio just to get you oriented and then tell you how I know Yolanda, and then Yolanda will share. We have so many amazing questions for her about her take on things. Yolanda Williams is a conscious parenting coach, social justice instructor, and most importantly, a single mom to one amazing daughter. Yolanda empowers parents with tools to be more intentional, conscious parents in order to raise the next generation of emotionally well, liberated, free thinkers, and in the process, form deeper, more intentional relationships with their children. Woo-woo! Through her podcast, conferences, webinars, and writings, Yolanda curates critical and candid conversations about race, social justice, and parenting with authenticity, truth, and compassion, and helps people find tangible tools to create personal and collective transformation. Yolanda provides coaching, DEI training for educators, and many more on her website, which is parentingdecolonized.com. And you can also follow her on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And all of that information will be on our notes for this podcast. So welcome, Yolanda.
Thank you all so much for having me. I'm excited.
The way I know Yolanda is through her podcast, which is Parenting Decolonized Podcast. That was happening for years. How many years?
Oh, a few years. I went on hiatus for a little bit, but I probably have like 50 episodes, so something like that.
So I started listening to your podcast before I even decided to be a non-authoritarian parent. And I didn't have a context or words or language for it, but something was so drawn by you and how you talk to your guests. And I think what you've done for me, the impact that you've had on me through the years, Yolanda, is understanding parenting in a systemic world, like in a systemic process of oppression. Like I have come to see through long study and my own learning is that I can't be a social justice activist and still control the shit out of my kid. Like those things don't make sense, but I never had words for that. And that's right. how you've helped me so much to put things in a context. So I'm not just alone parenting in my house. Everything I do is an action on my belief systems. Yeah. And so I just was wondering if you want to say anything about your work or what you're into these days or what you're passionate about.
Yeah. So again, thank y'all for having me. You know, I met you through, was it TikTok? And I was like, just, I love the way you spoke about parenting and the fact that you have, you know, this background in behavioral health psychology. I think it's really important because you're able to then understand why kids and why parents sometimes act the way that we do. And, you know, I don't have like a formal background in a whole lot of things. I'm from the school of hard knocks at this point in my life. But what I really set out to do was help parents understand that the way that we parent can sometimes mirror these oppressive systems out, you know, in the world. And a lot of us grew up under an oppressive parenting structure. I grew up with someone who did better than her mother, but was still abusive to, you know, at this point. So I was trying to figure out like, what does it look like for me to not raise my daughter that way? I had no idea about conscious parenting, decolonizing any of that. I really got into that after I had my daughter. First, it was gentle parenting, and that gave me the ick because it was very, very white, and it felt like I couldn't connect to it. Then it was positive parenting, which is, you know, it's cool. All these damn names, right? The reason why I gravitated to conscious parenting is it was more about me. It was more about my behavior and my mood and my mindset, my trauma, and not about me trying to figure out how to control my child's behavior, right? Because a child is going to child. So I had to figure out like, what do I need to do to react to her childlike behavior in a conscious way? And this is still something I struggle with because I was not raised this way. So I have to be cognizant of the fact that I am unlearning and relearning and decolonizing and reparenting all while trying to parent someone. And my child is autistic and she doesn't have very many words. So it does add a layer to, and I'm neurodivergent. I have ADHD. So we sometimes, our sensory stuff clashes up against each other. So it's a constant, like I'm having to be gentle with myself while also having to be critical of myself, right? Because we do have to look back and be like, I could have did that better. And I feel like a lot of parents, it makes them feel bad. So they don't want to do that critical analysis of themselves, but like we have to in order to grow. So that was kind of my journey into where I'm at now. And decolonizing just really came up when I really took a hard look at specifically Black parenting, what in the United States, how that emerged. And a lot of it emerged on the plantation back in the day. A lot of the enslaved people were young that were brought over here. And the parenting was informed by the oppression around them. And a lot of it was for protection, right? Like protection, even through Jim Crow, it was about protecting their child from these people who could just kill them without recourse. But now, even though we still have that fear, because it's very valid fear and it still happened, because it does happen, I don't want to live and make decisions from that place of fear. Mm. So that's why I am like, hey, Black parent, I get it. Okay. Our children can be snatched from us at any moment. We get it. However, we cannot become like the oppressors. We can't parent our children in a way that just continues the oppressive cycle. We gotta choose something different.
I mean, you are talking about what the word decolonized means. I think a lot of people actually don't know what that means when it relates to parenting.
Decolonization is a process. It does mean land back for Indigenous people. It also means uncovering the ways that colonization has impacted everyone. Everyone's mental health, their psychological issues, the environment, how we view children, how we view ourselves, understanding how the fact that colonization has impacted the way that we work together in community. So a lot of the ways that we act as parents, even for white people, are informed by colonialism, and understanding that like psychological warfare that is colonization is really helpful in the conscious parenting landscape, at least for me. Because I was able to see parallels. I was able to see the way that like fascism and colonialism and, you know, police brutality, how all of that stuff mirrors authoritarian parenting. They really do look just like each other. It's about fear, power over, and control of other people. And they use fear and they use manipulation in order to maintain that power. And any kind of rebellion is violently squashed, right? And we think about that with these old school parents, these oppressive parents. Anytime a child is rebellious, it's like violence. Let me beat that rebellion out of you. It's the same with these systems. That's why we are so, when it comes to capitalism, we feel so beaten down that we don't have the energy to fight back. So but that's something that we've been normalized in our parent, like through our childhood. It's like normalized, like, okay, there's this oppressor and they get to do whatever they want to you and you get to just take it and then die. Like that's literally the cycle. And I refuse.
Right. So I think that a lot of people hear that, but they're like, well, I have no idea what the alternative is to keep mm-hmm. my child safe. I don't have any other tools. I don't know any other way to do it. This is how I was treated. This is what's coming through me. And then I was really hoping we could get into talking about class and privilege mm-hmm. somewhat, because I also think people believe that if you take off authoritarian parenting, you have to have the time and space to develop something else. And that's a class issue.
Right. I mean, there's definitely privilege in, this type of parenting. I don't believe it's the end all be all. I know a lot of people who don't have class privilege, right? That are able to parent in this way. The thing I want to always remind people of is how these systems work to oppress us. And if you are somebody that is struggling, you know, to put food on the table, to keep a roof over your head, that stress that's building up in your body, if it doesn't come out in some healthy way, most likely might come out on your child, right? Because it's constant stress. It's never ending. And so when some of those stressors are not present, there is more space for patience. There's more space for thought to pause. Mm. A lot of us are reactive because the stress is so built up it just has to come out sometime. So I say that, you know, people look at class, they look at privilege and they only think of like class and race, but I have privilege of time, right? I'm able to wake up and choose my day. And that's a privilege. A lot of people don't have that. They have to wake up and just get moving and get out that door. And that's why you have parents cussing their kids out. You know what I'm saying? Because they're just like, I got to get to work, hurry up. And they mm-hmm. feel like they're not able to slow down. They are, but it's harder. Mm-hmm. So it's not impossible. It's just a roadblock is what I like to tell folks. And those roadblocks are intentional because we are being kept sick. We are being kept, you know, tired and feeling like there's no hope. But that's why community is so important, because if we have people who we can call and give us a break when we need one, or, you know, being in a two-parent household sometimes is a privilege, because you might have another person. You can be like, okay, I need to get out of the house. I'm leaving. And you can go. But, you know, some folks, I don't have that. So I've had to figure out, like, how do I cultivate rest for myself as a single mom? So I lean on my family and I lean on my friends and to be like, listen, I need time. I ask my sister all the time, can you watch Chia so I can go out and hang out with my friends and just have a night? And I don't get it often, but when I get it, I like treasure it. I want us as people who are trying to be more liberated and who are trying to be trying to think in a more liberated, revolutionary way to really start to try to think more non-binary. Non-dualistically, I guess, also the word, because a lot of folks are just like this either or camp, like you're either a good parent or you're not, or you're a conscious parent. It's so much in between that, and we're all just trying the best that we can, and we need each other in order to do really well at life in general.
Right. And I feel like even if you do have to get up and go, and then you have to get home, do dinner, and then bedtime, you know, even if you have to do that all day long, you know, all the time, there's still space to see the power structure. Like, you can still become aware of the power structure in your family. Just that, just starting there.
I agree. And if there's no reprieve from that, it doesn't matter.
Right.
Like, what does that awareness matter when you are literally, you feel like you're in prison? So we just have to, we can't just say people should know or they should be aware. There has to be a way for people to access this care that they need in order to be the type of parent. I've been telling folks, we cannot advocate for children without advocating for parents. Mm-hmm. And we have to be more compassionate in the way that we are looking at parenting. Mm-hmm. Children are the victims here and our parents. Like, it's like a you know, the hierarchy of power and control, and children are at the very bottom. We have power over them, and the way that we use that power, a lot of us, is very detrimental to these children's health. I think we need to then also go a step further and be like, okay, now you're aware, what is it that we could do as a community to help? If in that moment, even though they're aware, but they're not able to access any kind of help, any kind of like mental health, I don't know, support. It really is just like, what does that awareness do but almost make it worse sometimes? Because like, they're aware, then they get into this like guilt spiral.
Because you know, like, what you're doing, but you can't stop it. What do you do then, Yolanda? You're working with parents who are saying like, there is absolutely nothing for me out there. I'm literally a single parent. I have no other supports. I have a couple of kids and I know what I need to do and I can't stop doing what I'm doing because I got to get to work and I got to do the double shift. And how do you, where do you start? Like when they say that there is no community support.
We have to be active participants in our own liberation. We can't quit our jobs and we can't like just be like, oh, I'm just going to stay home all day. So we also have to help figure out our own solutions. There may not be built-in familiar support or even family or friend support. So it has to become like, what can I do, right? This is where I ask parents, what can you outsource? What can you delegate? What can you say no to? Right? Because a lot of us have obligations that we probably don't need to have if we're exhausted. Sometimes some of those extracurricular activities we want our kids to do, if we can't do them because we need to rest, then you need to rest. If you have to take a day and not clean, my house is a wreck right now because I can't on weekends. It's so difficult. I have a hard time on weekends because it's just like a sensory overload the whole time. So I really just don't worry about my house on weekends. I can't, because that will add one more stress. So I call those days, just keep everyone alive days. You know what I'm saying? Like where I am just able to access the minimal amount of care for everybody, including myself. Are we fed? Are we safe? Awesome. You get this tablet. The house is a mess. And this might sound really chaotic for a lot of people, but it allows me to have a mental break. So it's like, what can you delegate? I can afford to, or at least I try to afford, I budget out my laundry to be done by somebody else. Because I do not want to do it. It won't get done. We'll just be buying new clothes if it was up to me, okay? Because I hate laundry that much. So is it using your dishwasher more? Is it saying no to some kind of obligation that you like work thing so you can go home and rest? Is like, what can you say no to? What can you delegate? What can you outsource? Because you have to be an active participant in your own liberation. And it doesn't all have to be buying stuff. Saying no doesn't cost anything sometimes. So it's like, just think about that. And then think about the different ways we can cultivate community. I'm sorry, y'all. You're going to have to get out the house sometimes. I don't know what to tell you. Like, online community is very important. I've built an amazing online village. Also, they can't babysit my kid. Okay. So we got to get out the house and talk to people and go and do stuff, get to the park, like we have to create the village that is not there. And a lot of folks are just unwilling to do that. Some folks are just like being COVID cautious. And I completely understand that. Can you and your kids wear a mask and go out and like get out the house and find people who are also COVID conscious that you could possibly be in a little bubble with, you know, like, we have to get out of our comfort zone. No one's coming to save us. No one. So we have to figure out how we can save ourselves.
I counsel and also do mentoring sessions with parents from all kinds of walks of life. And I mostly talk to people who were raised female, right? And to moms, mostly moms. And it's so hard for them to feel worthy of taking a break. I mean, this is something I come up against over. I have to give them a big speech about why they have to take a break if they don't want to keep hating their child. I'm like, you have to step away. You have to figure out you have to figure that out. And it's so hard for them because they don't feel like they're allowed to. So I always have to break it down. Like you're actually not going to like your child if you don't do this.
Right. You're not going to like yourself.
Right.
You're not going to like yourself. And you know, part of colonialism is disembodiment of self. We don't want to feel things and we don't want to, it's hard. We have been conditioned to not feel in order for us to keep going. So when you stop for a moment and you feel all the feelings that come up, sometimes it can feel very devastating and it can feel hard. I think a lot of people don't want to stop and don't want to rest because they don't want to feel. So to me, that's one of the key things that we have to do to decolonize and to conscious reparent ourselves and conscious parent these children, is to start to feel things. and let the devastation, the grief, the anger, the rage that comes up, let that come out in a constructive way. Mm-hmm. I saw someone, I saw a coach on TikTok, and she was showing how she like throws pillows on the ground, like we'll talk with her kid. Like she's feeling ragey in her body. She's like, I just start throwing soft things on the ground. Yeah. You know, me, I throw hard things in my closet. I need to feel like, I'm sorry, that closet is a mess, because I go in there and I chuck stuff around. Okay. That rage, because we are all walking filled with rage. If you think you're not, you're lying to yourself. We are angry. And a lot of us take that anger out on our children because it has nowhere to go. It has to go somewhere. And that is an easy target. So it's like, you got to feel the stuff when it's coming up. And that whole thing about not resting. Yeah, that's, again, colonialism is capitalism telling us that we don't deserve that unless, right? And a lot of us were programmed into that as children. You know, you come home from school and you got 50 million things to do before you can even sit down and just rest after you've damn near worked the whole day at school. You got to come home and make sure the house is clean. And for some of us, we had to cook and take care of siblings and then do homework. And then we earned the right to sit down somewhere. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye. Mm-hmm. I am going to rest. If I have gotten to the point where if my body feels like it needs a nap, a bitch is getting a nap. Okay, I'm laying down. I'm cuddling up on the sofa. And I don't feel, I don't feel bad about that. Now I had to go through the feeling of feeling bad and letting that come up and then letting it go. So it is a process. It's not going to just, you're not going to just sit down one day and be like, you know what? Rest is revolution. I get it now. That's not going to happen. You're going to feel that guilt that tells us as moms that we need to be martyrs and die for our children. And I want to live for mine. I'm not dying for my child. Mm-hmm. I want her to see me thriving. That it does not serve her to see me not thriving, right? So I'm resting, and I want her to feel comfortable resting. At the end of the day, we have to figure out where these messages come from, where we learn them from. A lot of us learn them in childhood, and then it carried over, you know, into education, where we're told that we can't rest either. Then right into our work environments. So it's time for us to start investigating that and just be like, I reject this, and I'm going to work through the feelings that come up as I work through this.
I don't know if you guys know about the manifesto. It's a book. It's called Rest is Resistance. It's written by this writer, scholar. And I heard about it on a show, and it was all about exactly this, about how resisting the grind culture of the slog of capitalism to take a fucking nap, literally her entire website and everything that she markets that ministry. That ministry.
Yeah.
The best. And I love it. And I think it's exactly this. It's just really hard, you know, when I'm talking with clients who are like, it's not just a nap though. It's like everything. It's like all of the factors in my life. Like everything feels like they're being swallowed up, you know? And it's really hard. I think the work in that though is to figure out, like you said, like chipping away at the things. What are the basic needs that are not being met, you know? And figuring out like, how are you going to get those needs met just over time to start chipping away, to start then getting back and feeling rejuvenated enough to prioritize the relationship that you want with your kids.
And with yourself. The most important person in my family is me. Mm-hmm. It is. Because if I'm not okay, then Gia will not be okay. And so that's why with conscious parenting, I have to focus on myself. I have to. Because if I'm not focusing, and if I'm hyper-focused on her all the time, I'm probably going to neglect myself. And I feel like that is what I kept hearing in gentle parenting communities. You know, like
people getting burned out.
Yeah, to your own detriment, you have to be so focused on your child.
Yeah.
It's like, absolutely the fuck not. I'm not doing that. I am a person who is deserving as well of my own attention, of my own love. And I'm unwilling to sacrifice myself for anybody, not even my child. I'm just not. And so getting to that place has not been easy, but I have to get there in order for me to be fully aware of myself, of my actions, of how my actions impact her, right? So she's important. And I'm not saying she's not. I'm just saying, like, in my household, I have to prioritize me in order for her to be okay. That whole, you know, fill up your cup and then she gets the overflow.
Yeah.
But I can't, you know, try. I've tried. The times that I, you know, was running conferences and I was doing it by myself, and my cup wasn't even half full. It was like almost empty. And I was a terrible parent during those times. Terrible. You know, and I remember getting on a call with Akilah Richards, and I'm just sobbing because I'm just like, I'm a terrible mom. Like, you know, I've been yelling, just being so mean. And she was like, you're exhausted. Mm. You need to rest. You know what I'm saying? So like, I have to be okay in order for her to be okay. So it's like, we have to start making some decisions and making them for our life. I mean, you asked what I'm up to, and I just bought some land out here in Arkansas.
Yeah.
And my goal is to create a farm for us. And on that farm, we're going to be obviously growing food. But my biggest thing is I want G to have this wild and free childhood, just be able to explore. And basically a country version of my childhood city life, because I got to just do all the things as a 90s kid, you know, somebody growing up in the 90s. It got to just run around and explore and be wild, and we're fine, right? Like, okay, we were neglected a little bit, but you know what I'm saying? Let's keep it real. They did not know where we were. So like, I want to create a space for her to do that safely on this land. And it's important for me. This is a complete lifestyle shift from everything that I know. But I realized, like, I have to make decisions that for her that mean a lot of work for me in the front end. But what I want for her is to not have to grow up and toil. She's autistic. A lot of autistic people find it very hard to find jobs, you know, when they're older. And I don't want her to, I want her to have options and to have choices, right? So I have to make some different lifestyle choices. A lot of us as parents have to look at our lives and be like, is this conducive to the life that I want my child to have? And sometimes that means making choices like maybe finding a different job where you can spend more time with them, maybe moving to a different place that's closer to family. These are very hard, sometimes financially like bad decisions in the front end. But I feel like if we make, sometimes we make certain decisions and then we work a little bit hard, and then in the end, it works out well for our children. We may be suffering in, you know, I know it's going to be a lot of work for me. Gia can't help me make this farm. It's going to be a lot of work and a lot of money. And I'm doing it because I know that that's what she needs in order to thrive when she's a little bit older. Mm-hmm. And I'm nervous about the whole situation, but I know it's probably what's best for her.
That is so amazing, Yolanda, that you got that land. What an incredible miracle. I wanted to say something about slowing down and resting. I have to say, I've been working on slowing down for like 10 years. I've been working on coming out of workaholism. It takes all of my attention and focus to not be a workaholic. I'm an overfunctioner. I don't know what you want to call it. You know, I'm a survivor. So that's how I survived. I run, and it totally worked. I ran myself right out of my abusive household, and then I couldn't stop running. And menopause is like, boom, nope, that's not going to work anymore. Your body's not going to let you do it. Your body's actually not going to let you run. And so I've been starting this practice, which sounds a lot like what you're saying, Yolanda, where like, so I work at home. So I'm with clients, and then I have a break, and then I'm with my kid, and then I work more, and I do in and out working all day. And I have to make decisions about where to put my attention throughout the day sometimes. And so now I stop and I put my feet on the ground and I tune in. What do I actually have the energy for right now? Like, I have 2 hours. Like, what do I have the energy for?
And it's something I even still struggle with, because, you know, building this farm and building a business, it does take so much of my time. And I have to remember sometimes to put my phone down. Like, put your phone down. Can't be on social media. you know, and sometimes Gia will come slap the phone out of my hand, or she'll like go forcefully hand me something, you know, I'm like, play with me. And to remind me like, hey, come on now. So it's definitely hard, especially when you, like you said, you're just used to, you know, working at a sort of manic pace. Everything that I have is because I've worked very, very hard for it. And, same thing happened to me where my body was basically like, you need to stop. I think it was after my third conference. I basically was sick all the time. Beginning of 2021, I was sick for like 5 months, just on and off. It was COVID, and it was all the stuff Gia was getting from school, but it had me out. Like, I was just, all I could do was lay, and I realized like, I need to take a break. And so I had to like basically force myself to lay down, like literally rest for a good like 5 months. I had to just do that. And I had to just trust that my community had me, and they did, you know, and wow. I was so thankful for that. Yeah.
You know, something will suffer at some point. Like when we're talking about parenting, if you don't listen, your relationship is going to show you.
It is.
That you know, spent a lot of energy and put a lot of time into something that you shouldn't have really mm-hmm. at that point. But we don't know until we kind of almost, it's like you said, Rithia, like you've been working at this for 20 years, trying to rest. And for me, I feel like part of the conscious parenting is like really trying to connect with the awareness of like when I'm getting to that place of burnout. But then even resting at that point, I know from my own experience and also working with clients, like we sometimes just like can't, we feel like we can't. I'm sure we always can really at the end of the day, because I was just sick with the stomach flu for 4 days, like talking about being knocked out. I mean, I literally couldn't move, could not really move at all. And that's reminding me of like how it's like the vacation from parenting that I really needed. Actually, because my kid is almost two, like two in May. And it's just like the onslaught of needs right now at this age with working, running a business too, working with parents, helping everybody, like doing all the things, pouring from the cup, but thinking I can. Stomach flu comes. And I was like, oh, you know what? Thank God. Honestly, this is hell, but I really need to be in bed for two straight days right now. But it's amazing to me having this conversation, realizing all this. I know all of this. And yet, It's really a lot, right? Where you say to everybody, no, I'm putting my phone on do not disturb, or like I'm turning it off. Even me right now, I'm trying to figure out, I need to set boundaries with everybody in my life almost. Like anybody that messages me, I don't need necessarily say it, but I need to for myself be like, Kara, you're not going to use your phone from like my daughter wakes up at freaking right now, 6 a.m., 6 till 10. Mm-hmm. And then from the time she gets back, 4 till 10, like 4 till like after 4, like I'm not doing the phone thing because I need that time for me, because otherwise I'm giving it all to everybody else. And when I work with parents, I try to, that's one of the things you can talk about, I think, right? When you're thinking about where can I rest, do you have like an idea of phone boundaries that you can set just for yourself?
Speaking of the boundary thing, being honest with people. So when I was, my Facebook page got taken over, you know, hacked or whatever, I was bombarded with all these people who really wanted to support me, but it was too much. I didn't want to talk about it with every single person. And so what I had to tell people, thank you so much, I don't feel like talking about this right now. And I've gotten to the point where my friends will call me, and if I don't feel like talking, I will reject the call and tell them, I don't feel like talking right now. Can we talk later? And like, just being honest with people. And the folks who I'm honest with, they know they can be honest with me. They know that they can say like, I'm going to cancel this meeting because I don't have it in me. Okay. Thank you, actually. Cancel the meeting, child, because right. I don't want to be on this meeting anyway. So like, and it's not, I just want my time. Like, let's keep it real. And creating those boundaries has been so important to my mental health and my self-care.
And you know what also that is also resistance, because fuck all of the bullshit. Yes. Language in corporate fucking capitalist,
all that niceness
bullshit. It's just like that I resent. I could go on and on about that.
Yes. That's corporate errand.
I feel like we're speaking to, is really just resisting the urge to placate and instead really getting in touch with what the fuck do I really fucking need? And that is really hard. And we, Ruthie and I talk a lot about being both therapists, you know, a therapist can help, but if you don't have a therapist, like just start listening to more podcasts on awareness and figuring out, you know, what it is you need, and then put those boundaries with that honest language into practice. And there you go. That's your start. But it's also resistance, and it's really, really hard to resist, as we've talked about.
Yeah, boundaries. A lot of us, you know, we grew up with our boundaries being trampled on, being told that we don't deserve them, right? Because we're a child, and why do you need boundaries or privacy or anything like that? And so a lot of us don't understand boundaries. We think that they're about other people when they're really just about us. They're about keeping us safe, about keeping us sane, right? So like, and a lot of us, because we're not used to boundaries, other people's boundaries might upset us. And I just want y'all to know that that's not the other person's problem. I'm not going, I had to, and again, this is sitting in that, the feelings that come up. Because when you first start making boundaries, you feel guilty. You feel like, oh my God, they're going to be so mad at me. And I had to just sit in that and just be like, and if they are, what's the worst that could happen? Mm-hmm. They're gonna whoop you. You're gonna get a whooping. You're gonna stop being my friend because I set a boundary. Like, just sitting in that and just allowing that feeling to come up and then pass. And then once you keep doing it, you realize nothing, it's not an emergency. Nothing is broken. Everyone's alive and everyone's okay. And if they're not, they can tell you that. They can say, you know what, I really need you. But it's about using, you know what I'm saying, communicating. Mm-hmm. And a lot of us, we're not taught that either. Mm-hmm. So this is a part of reparenting where it's just like, what do I need to learn? What do I need to learn that I was not taught? You know, I was not taught healthy communication skills, how to make and keep and reinforce my own boundaries, how to respect other people's boundaries. I wasn't taught any of that stuff. So now it's like about how I need to start doing those things for myself. And I need to recognize what other people are doing them as well.
The word caretaking, you know, caretaking is when we put other people's needs before our own as a way to feel good about ourselves, like a good person. Caretaking is all about feeling like a good person. And I have like maybe four or five people in my life that I'm kind of supporting who are in kind of crisis, I would say. They're people that I balance, like I check in with all of them all week long. And I'm like, is that okay? I don't know. Is that healthy? Like, I just realized it's like the deeper cut of how, what part of it is caretaking and what part of it is my service, is being of service. I really believe in being of service. Like, yeah. I have all these resources and this is how I use them.
Yeah.
It's hard to tell sometimes.
I think it really depends on how you feel about it in the moment. You know what I'm saying? Like, if there's a day where you're just like, I don't have the capacity to check in, then don't fucking check in.
Yeah, I have to just listen in. But caretaking is an addiction, I feel. It's an addiction.
Oh, it is.
Right. So sometimes you want the hit. You want the hit of feeling good about yourself. You know.
Do you know what I will say to myself, which I find really effective for me personally, is this for them or is this for me?
Mm.
It's not to say that like I shouldn't check in because I don't want to upset anybody. You know, I don't want to, it's not like you should not check in because you're worried about how that will make them feel. Rather, just like, is it really for them? Is it in a supportive way? Or is it really for you? Is it to make you feel like you've done something, you know, helpful that you really don't know is? That's kind of how I try to frame it. And it's been really helpful for me.
I'm going to try that, Kara.
Yeah.
These are deep patterns. They're so deep.
They are.
Well, I'm the oldest of three girls.
Yeah.
So I also have this, like, you know, caretaking, and I have, you know, my sisters have had to tell me to back off sometimes because I can take over. It's like,
it's like problem. the nurturer.
Yeah. Like they tell me something and next thing you know, they're getting bombarded with links and all this stuff. And I'm just that person, you know. It's also my ADHD. Like I will go on like my friends are having like drainage issues at their farm. And so I woke up and like looked up like plants that like to be in like flood zones and like sending them links. And I had to remember like some folks don't care for that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So I sent them two and I was like, I'm gonna leave y'all alone now. You know, I understand that also a lot of us have been socialized to not ask for help. And so I get, that's another big reason why for my caretaking is because it's been so hard for me to ask for help. I figure it's hard for so many people. Because I remember being in that place where, you know, my daughter, I was not sleeping when at all when she was born, and I had to go back to work 2 weeks after she was born. I was working from home, but it's still like I did not get to rest, and she was not sleeping through the night, and I was a customer service rep, so it was very, very hard. I was constant tears, exhaustion, breastfeeding, co-sleeping, all of that stuff. And I remember calling my sister, and she was like, how are you? And I was like, she could tell something was wrong. I was like, she was like, do you need help? And I just started crying. Cause I didn't know, you know, I'm not the person that is used to asking for help. I'm used to be the person that helps other people. And she was like, if you need help, just tell me, you know, and I'll come. And so she came over and I got a break. And now I let them know. I can't imagine what it's like for someone who has never had a day, you know, a day off from parenting, because you're going to suffer mentally for that. Mm-hmm. Your children end up suffering too. So that's, again, it's like, how can you figure out ways for you to, is it, and this is going to sound terrible, but I don't care. Is it maybe while they're in school, you call out that day and you're able to get a few hours? And again, there's always a risk, or there's always a consequence. I know that when I sleep in, or when I'm napping all day, the house is a mess. I'm going to have to clean that. You're going to lose money if you call out. I get it. Sometimes it's like, I got to make that sacrifice in order for me to get a break, in order for me to get to be able to rest. Like, mm-hmm. I have to sacrifice here in order to get some semblance of a break. This is why we need more community support. That's divesting from these systems. That is community care, collectivism. That is hard, because it's literally antithesis of capitalism, of colonialism. We are supposed to be struggling alone. And we see what that's gotten us.
I'm just wondering if maybe this is a good transition to talking about having a neurodiverse child. Which, yeah. I know is different for everybody, but we haven't talked about it like that much on our podcast yet. I don't know what we want to get into about it. But maybe you could just talk about your reality, what it's like for you.
I mean, it's every day is hard. I'm not even gonna lie. Like, it's definitely difficult being a single parent. We're both neurodivergent. Having a child who is disabled, to not be able to speak is a disability. And so I'm constantly having to figure out, like, what accommodations can I make in my home in order for her to thrive? And sometimes those accommodations clash up against my own needs. One of my big things having ADHD is I don't remember stuff. I don't remember. I need reminders. Things aren't habits for me. I have to put my toothbrush in a place for me to see it. Otherwise, I'm going to forget to brush my teeth. That's part of my ADHD. And it's part of a lot of people's ADHD. But I can't do that because she will take my toothbrush and she will use it in terrible ways. Like,
how old is Gia now?
She's six.
She's six. Okay.
So I now, in order to accommodate the fact that she's so curious and wants to, like, she's very, like, she likes to touch everything, very sensory seeking. I now have to put things up, which means that I can't find stuff, which means my self-care suffers because I don't see it. Mm-hmm. And so it's definitely difficult to not have someone else here. She has issues with getting her hair combed. So I've had to really figure out, I've had to let go of the way that a lot of Black people have been socialized around hair and around appearance. I had to really let go of that. And just say, you know, today I could not comb her hair today, and just be okay with that, because I'm not going to traumatize her in order for the adult gaze of people, of adult judgment. I'm not going to do that. So I've had to learn how to let stuff go, and I've had to learn how to be more curious about what she needs, about my own needs, about everything. I mean, I have the most curious child in the world. She wants to be outside. I have an outdoors kid too, which is hard when you're an indoor person. And so that's a big reason why I'm just like, I got to get on this land. We got to make you an epic playground that's safe, that's fenced. So she's also an eloper. She will run like she has a football in her hand and is trying to get to the goal. She's very fast. And so, and I'm not. And so it's just, it's a lot of work. I need help. And so one of the things that I will be doing is creating like on the like pads for like an RV or tiny home for maybe a couple more single moms to be able to come and stay there so we can help each other out. Because this can't continue on for, it's just, it's too much. It's too hard. The beautiful thing about having such a curious child whose brain works differently is that she just sees the world in such a beautiful way. And it helps me to see the world that way too. Like she finds beauty in the most small, in the smallest thing, and is curious about everything. So, you know, in order to allow her to be wild and free and curious, I can't just let her go. I have to follow up behind her. But because I'm following up behind her, I'm like, okay, what are you looking at? And I get to see this weird thing that she has in her hand that that freaks me out, that she is so curious about, you know? Like I'm discovering things because of her. And she makes me slow down. I'm somebody that's like this. Let's go, right? But she's definitely not. She's like, I'm not gonna do that right now. And so she makes me slow down and she makes me like notice and be more present. And that is a gift.
It sounds like so much of the work of a conscious parent is to, you know, change our systems instead of using control to reach an outcome. Like literally allowing her to lead you into this entire new walk of life.
Yeah.
Because you're recognizing her needs really at the end of the day, instead of manipulating her into fit a mold.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely, I would have never come here without her. When, you know, I never really wanted children. I was 36 when I got pregnant with her. And I was actually in Belize with her father. We were looking for where are we going to live in Belize? My whole thing was I'm about to be an expat. I'm about to get out of the United States. You know, I'm trying to be this like jet setting, you know, bougie auntie. Children were, I didn't even like children. I mean, I could not stand them. I was one of those child-free, terrible people.
Wow, look at you now. This is crazy.
Yeah. It's wild.
People can change.
Yeah. You can change. Well, you know, the thing is, even if you don't have children, it's really investigating, where does that come from? Why do you not like children?
Right, right.
You know, and I realized that I looked at children like a burden because I felt like I was a burden.
Right.
And I had to start like working through that stuff. But, you know, since having her, especially having a disabled child, it really makes you think about the world. And I don't want her to fit into this current system. Mm-hmm. I want there to be a whole new system.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm not forcing her to go to, you know, kindergarten where I know she won't thrive.
Mm-hmm.
She will not thrive there. She's actually going to be in trouble all the time. They're going to punish her. Mm-hmm. And she's not someone that's easily controlled. There's times where I will want to revert back, you know, revert to.
Right.
It's just easier, right? Like
totally.
That aggressive parenting is easier.
It's easier. And it does work. Like we've talked about before. It will work. It provides you with that short term. Right. You've got compliance. You can move through your day easier. Yeah. You get over here. You do what I say. You put on your coat now or else.
And go to your room. Go to your room because you can go to your room. Yeah. My childhood, I was in my room all the time because it was like, go to your room.
Yeah. Well, I was in there because I wanted to be, because I was just like, I don't want to be in there. I wanted to escape. My room was my like sanctuary, you know?
Right.
The thing is, she wants to be up under me all the time. It's a lot.
Right.
When you are sensory, like, all the touching, I get touched out very, very easily. And Gia does not care. She's like, let me love you, you know? So
Gia doesn't talk.
She speaks a very, very little, you know, she speaks, but just we're not having conversations, no.
Awesome.
Yeah, she has.
You're just tuned in and you can read what she needs because you're tuned in together.
Yeah, well, I remember a pediatrician was just like, well, maybe if you stopped anticipating her needs,
she would talk. They always say that.
And I was just,
they will say that even to toddler parents, right?
Well, that's going to say they said this when she was about two before when I knew something. What I knew, I didn't know that she was autistic. I just knew that she wasn't meeting milestones. So I was like, I need to get her tested, and they wouldn't do it. So they were like, just stop meeting her needs. Just stop anticipating them. And I'm like, she can't tell me.
Right. You it's know like if she could, she fucking would. Language is literally intrinsically wired to be motivating because that's what we need to do to get our way through the world. Like, that is a ridiculous thing. Parents are expected to then just like, well, just step back. You need to let them fill in the blank. This is like common advice.
It's very common. It's not okay. Yeah. That advice is detrimental to neurodivergent children specifically, autistic children specifically.
Yeah, because it looks like to them, like you're withdrawing your love.
Right.
That's how they feel.
And I you know, she's not able to tell me. So what the hell I'm going to do? Right. Just stand there and wait for her to like, well, the thing is too, what I had to realize, like watching her try to speak, right? She actually has a speech impairment. Now, what I do is now when she's like, instead of her, like she'll force her juice cup into my hand. So I will just be like juice, right? Because I wanted her to associate words. Mm-hmm. She doesn't have to say it. She doesn't have to perform for me in order to get the juice. I just say it so she can start to associate like this word with the thing that she wants. And we can eventually start to have this conversation. But if she doesn't speak a word, I still need to get her needs met. And I'm trying to get her after this, actually, I need to go and pick up a loaner AAC device because she's just been approved through the state to get an AAC device. So she has an iPad. And I remember seeing someone that was just like, that was like, my child will speak. And I was like, if they never speak, they still need accommodations. So if she doesn't speak and she just wants to speak through her AAC device, I don't care. As long as she's able to get her needs met, right? As long as she's able to, my biggest concern having a child who does not speak very many words is her safety. Her being able to say, this is my name. Her being able to tell on somebody. This is why we don't, you know, people are like, her dad is, who lives in Chicago, is like, I would love for her to, you know, spend summers here. Until she can tell on somebody, I'm sorry. No, I'm sorry. She's not going out into a different state where I don't know all the folks, where I'm not going to get into all that. She's not going.
Yeah.
Because she needs to be able to communicate. Okay. You come out here and here's the AAC device. And it's just that, you know, him and his wife and her brothers, that's one thing, but you know, a whole different city where she can't access the iPad to be able to speak to me. No, I'm working with her school. She goes to an amazing school to help me teach her about her body parts and help me. Cause I'm like, these are my concerns. We know that autistic kids are sexually assaulted at much higher rates. And I want to help her get the language because I'm not going to be there all the time. So I just want her to figure out like, what are these body parts? Can we put them on the AAC device? So we can start to have discussions about this in a way that is appropriate for her developmentally. We need to empower her with this knowledge. And I want her to feel like she has a say in her life in some capacity. I have to make different decisions. Like she's going to, I kept her back a year. So she's six. She's still in preschool. She goes to kindergarten next year or next fall. She's not going to kindergarten. I decided that she's not going. She's going to be unschooled, farm schooled. And then she's going to be getting services at the school that she's at now for like 4 hours a day. So again, this is me having to think about colonialism and education and think about things differently. You know, learning happens everywhere, all the time, all around us. She doesn't need to sit in a school to learn things that she doesn't need to learn right now. Because I just don't see how that's going to benefit her specifically, my child specifically, right? So now I have to figure out, like, what does it look like for me to have her home and unschooling her or farm schooling her? What does that look like?
You know, I'm an unschooler. She wants to go to school in the fall now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very nervous. It's just very scary for me that my kid is about to get plugged into the system. Now, what will that, how long will she put up with that? I'm so curious.
Exactly.
She really wants the social, she's going for the social connection. She wants to be around large groups of kids that are her age. She's really clear that's why she's going. What will she be willing to be put up with to do that? We will see. I'll let you know. But I know, you know, Akilah's work helped me so much with my my own family life. Yeah.
Have you seen those agile learning centers? There's not one of those near you?
No. Okay. Oh, yeah. No, there is. There is. My daughter doesn't want to go to that.
Okay. Well, no, I get it.
No, she wants to do what all of her friends are doing. She wants to be great. Part of. Yeah. So look, it's bringing up a lot for me.
I'm telling you right now, when these children are used to independence, they're going to be there and they're going to be like, how else can I get socialization?
Okay, good. We'll see. Well, so now we're homeschooling for the first time in her life. We're trying to sort of get her a little bit up to speed. And I've never done that before. So now we're like we're doing teaching time, which is very hard for all of us. We're like, I don't know how to do it, but it's kind of fun too. But you know, you'll see it. There's a flow. It just starts and you start following your kid and it unfolds just like what you already are doing. It's just that you're doing it more, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just want her to feel like I see her, right? And so as someone who sees her, I understand that a compulsory school environment is not going to be good for her. Yeah. And her father and I, we had words about this because he's not here all the time. At the end of the day, that was my decision. And I know because I am here and I'm doing the majority of the parenting, that she would not thrive in that environment.
Right.
And so I want her to be environments that she's going to thrive in. And right. I know school is not going to be that place. So like I said, it's about making decisions because would it be easier for me to just put her in school? Yeah, it would be.
Right.
I don't want to do that. Yeah. So
they say easier is a strange term because.
Easier for me just to be like, here you go, school. Right. Like get her in the car, drop her off. And then I get my day again.
Right, but what's not easier is what it's going to do to your kid.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. That's what I'm saying. That's why I have to make the, understanding that my kid is not going to thrive there. I have to do things that are not easy.
Yeah, I know.
That's the thing with this work and same with non-coercion, which we talk about. It would be so much easier having a two-year-old to train her. I could easily train her at this age. It would be super easy. I would do punishments and I would do rewards and I would do like dog training. And that's what a lot of parents do. They don't call it that. They just say it's being firm, kind, but firm and providing experiences that the child can learn from. But I don't do that because of the relational aspects and also the trauma that I know that ultimately imparts. And that's my biggest concern because we plan to send her to school, but with the way that we parent, it's not going to line up with how it is at home. So, stay tuned, listeners, for how that's going to go in 5 years, 4 years, because
we have a lot of stay tuned going on.
Yeah. But I really respect that unschooling approach. When you talk, about that with other people, you guys maybe know more unschoolers or people in kind of non-traditional schooling environments than I do. When I talk about unschooling, people think I'm absolutely fucking batshit. They think it's insane. They think it is.
So that's how everyone feels.
Is it? Yeah.
It's the schoolishness because we've been taught that you can only learn in this way, right? But again, you know, I tell people all the time, learning happens everywhere. You know, learning is literally happening as they play video games, as Gia is playing with her blocks. Learning, if we train our brains to see learning as just something that we just do without needing help, then it's easier to see. And I think what these parents who struggle with alternative education, they are kind of plugged in because they think this is going to save my kid. This is going to get them the job. This is, you know, it's capitalism. It's like, I need to make sure, I got to ensure my child has all the tools necessary for them to thrive in this capitalistic world. Okay, that's what you're going to do. I don't want them to thrive in capitalism. Fuck capitalism. I want capitalism to fall. So yeah, I'm raising that child. So it is a different conversation because we have different goals. I really do not want my child to be indoctrinated into thinking that her worth and her value is tied to her education or her money, right? I want her to grow up thinking about success in a completely different way. You know, if you have your time, to me, being able to basically wake up and be like, what do I need to do today? And not have to like rush off to work. That to me is success. So I want to redefine what all that looks like. But a lot of parents are afraid because capitalism is right here. And a lot of people are dying daily trying to be successful in this capitalistic hellscape. So they're trying to figure out, how can I give my child the leg up? How can I give them the tools necessary for them to beat this next person? You know, it's all about competition. And so they're willing to work within this system. And so it's hard for them to conceive that you're not willing to do the same thing. Like it feels almost like you are neglecting your child for you to not be doing the same thing to ensure that they have a job, you know, that they're able to thrive in capitalism. And it's just like, no, I just don't want them to thrive in capitalism. I want them to say fuck capitalism and do their own goddamn thing. We just have different philosophies.
I feel like, oh, I'm home. This is how I always felt when I listened to your podcast. I'd be like, oh, I'm home again. This is the best. My whole body relaxed. I'm like, this is, someone is thinking like me. What a relief. And I also think, just because I'm working with parents so much now, it's scary enough for them to parent at the times that their children are home. Think about unplugging from the system, and that's just unheard of.
It sounds like a lot of labor, and it is.
Yeah.
And again, it feels that way because we are not connected to each other or ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so that's why everything is interrelated and interconnected, because we see all the problems of the world and we see what would actually kind of fix them, you know, but the things that will fix them are the things that capitalism keeps us from: community, yourself, your children,
your time.
And so once we kind of start to reclaim that in some small way, I just feel empowered just by having my phone on silent, like you were saying, Kara, like just being able to put that boundary up, because that is a fuck you to colonialism, capitalism, and niceness. We have to, again, be active participants in our own liberation. So what does it look like for you to start trusting people? What do you need? What evidence that has to happen for you to start trusting people to be there for you? Because a lot of that distrust, it didn't just start with the folks who didn't show up for you. It started in your childhood, most likely. Mm. And you've had that lens already. But when I tell them that, some people think it sounds like victim blaming, and I'm not. I'm just like, you probably already had that lens of distrust, because a lot of us do. And it took me a long time to trust people to actually show up for me. Mm-hmm. I just never had it. And then once I started believing that people will show up for me, and I begin showing up for people in that same energy, and there will be people who will still break your heart. It's just a part of life. Even if you do all the work to start trusting people and to change the way that you think about community, some people will still break your heart, because that's just life. And you still have to trust people.
Yeah, I love that.
Oh, you know what? Why don't you say how people can find you? Like, before we stop recording, just say, how do we find you?
I don't know when this is coming out, so I'm hoping my page is back. But you can find me, first of all, my website, parentdecolonized.com. I'm also on Instagram and Twitter and TikTok under Parenting Decolonized. I also have a farm page called Wild and Free Family Farm on Facebook, where I'm sharing all things related to me building this farm from scratch, as well as conscious parenting and social justice issues. I feel like all of it, for me, is interconnected. So yeah, I hope y'all, and I'm going to be getting my podcast back up, which is mostly going to be on YouTube. So stay tuned for that to be back up in the next few months, I think.
Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, thank you so much, Yolanda. It was so good to meet you. I hope I'll see you again soon somewhere.
Yeah, no, once my podcast is back up, I would love to have y'all on.
This has been Your Kids Don't Suck. You can find me, Kara Tedstone, at www.karatedstonetherapy.com and on Instagram at Kara Tedstone Therapy. On my website, you'll find links to recommended readings and a link to my Reparenting with Mindfulness workbook, available now on Amazon.
You can find me, Rathia Lee, at www.rathia.com. That's RYTHEA.com. There you'll find published books, articles, and music and parenting videos. Also, I'm on TikTok at Rathia Lee, on Instagram at Rathia Lee. You can book parent mentoring sessions with me through my website. And also, I have an Advice from a Loving Bitch YouTube show that helps people heal self-hatred, and that's rathia.com/advice. It is important and essential to put our voices, Rathia and Kara, in a context. We are two white, cisgendered, straight, middle-class women living with financial and societal privilege. Because of this, our perspectives are limited and do not reflect the realities of all of our listeners. This podcast will feature guests with expertise around conscious parenting who differ in race, class, abilities, sexual orientation, and histories from us, to broaden the conversation and reflect the lives of as many people as possible. 25% of the proceeds of this podcast will go to creators of color who have been mentors and influences on our work and in our growth as parents.
If you like our show, please subscribe and stay tuned for more conscious parenting advice and insights. And check out our link tree at linktr.ee/yourkidsdontsuck to donate and connect with us.